So this is actually the fifth and last in a series of retreats. I originally got asked to come and do a retreat on spiritual receptivity, and as a result of that, I got asked to kind of go around all the rest of the mandala. As you know, our mandala of spiritual practice, there's integration, positive emotion, spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, and spiritual receptivity. But in order to fit in with the Adishtana program, so we didn't clash themes, I've been going in a rather eccentric orbit around the mandala. Spiritual death is actually the grand finale. We've done all the other four. And they're all on Free Buddhist Audio, if you're interested, if you want to catch up on any you've missed. The one on spiritual rebirth is just order only, so you have to go into that part of the site, because I was talking a lot about sadhana and insight, and some of it's felt quite order specific. But all those four previous retreats, they're all available. And on those previous retreats, I've tended to, whichever theme we were looking at, have all the elements of the mandala very explicitly there. So when we did spiritual receptivity, it was, say we were practicing just sitting, well, it was just sitting, and we'd look at how that was supported by integration and positive emotion, spiritual death, spiritual rebirth. And sometimes we'd have a kind of like a day on each. I'm not going to try and do that this time. There's a lot that we can explore around spiritual death. But still, it is very much in that context. We're practicing in the context of the whole mandala. We need integration and positive emotion as a basis, as a support for this. So although I'm mainly going to be talking about insight practice, we bring the whole of the mandala into the retreat, and we bring the whole of ourselves into the retreat. And we can be carrying on working on all those aspects. We're not leaving anything out. I've done quite a few retreats which have been called spiritual death, because that's the term that Bhante used in his talk in A System of Meditation in 1978. But I have noticed, like I did a retreat with that title, a small retreat in Cambridge a couple of years ago, and I noticed as people turned up, they were slightly uneasy. They weren't, just like full of the joys of coming on retreat. There was something about they were coming on a spiritual death retreat. And it was, it was subtle, but you could feel it. There was a slight kind of, oh, I'm not sure whether I'm going to enjoy this response. And I was thinking last night, that's like as we all sort of were going to salute the shrine at the beginning of the spiritual death retreat, I was thinking about those sort of gladiators, with the emperor going, "We who are about to die, salute you." So it's good just to, be aware of how you respond to things, and just make sure that if that term is creating any resistance in you, however subtle, that you just kind of bring that into awareness. Because, spiritual death is a spiritual death. It's the death of a delusion. In fact, it's the death of a whole series of delusions which are causing us all kinds of frustration and pain and suffering. And because of that, spiritual death is something to really rejoice in. And sometimes after you have some experience of spiritual death, you have some kind of reaction to it. But in that moment where you're seeing how things are, in that moment where you're experiencing more of the nature of things, that is all. There's always a sense of release there. That in itself is always positive. And spiritual death always comes along with spiritual rebirth. You can't have one without the other. Yeah. They're inseparable. It's not like something just, you just stop and there isn't a next moment. Yeah. There's always a transformation with spiritual death. There's always a transformation and an opening. So although we're focusing on spiritual death, the two are together. And they're together as we practice. So whenever there's a degree of spiritual death, however small, there's always some degree of seeing, there's always some degree of knowing, of understanding. And that seeing also involves some degree of letting go. So there's the happiness of being undeceived, of seeing, that's how things are. There's a happiness in when you let go, that always creates more freedom. That always creates, whatever I'm attached to, if I'm really attached to my watch, say, it's an old friend, I've had it a long time. If I let go of, if I see that it's, it's not me, it's not mine, it'll probably outlast me, but somebody else will have it if they still want to wear watches like this after I'm no longer here. When I do that, there's a certain freedom from anxiety about it, that I might lose it, something might happen to it, from that tension, this is my watch, it's not your watch, it's my watch, thank you very much. All that releases. So there's a freeing that comes with that seeing. And also, that creates a bit more space, a little bit more space. It's like, if I'm very attached to my watch and I hang on to it, that takes up energy and it takes up awareness. I've got to make sure I know where it is and I haven't lost it and it's still here. So when I don't do any of that, it just creates space in which I can be more open to other people, to life and to wider experience. I'm not trapped. I'm not as it were, hypnotized by this experience. So there's always those aspects in the experience. There's always some degree of knowing, seeing, understanding. There's always some degree of freeing and letting go. And that creates the space for a greater opening, and a greater opening of the heart. So we haven't got very, very long to go into all this, and I'm aware we've got a large number of you, and also a really big spread of experience and approaches. Just in the reporting in group, just inviting people to say a little bit about insight and how they practiced. You could hear in different ways whether people thought they were practicing insight and consciously trying to develop insight or not. There was definitely that element in everyone, but how it was expressed and how people were approaching it was very different. And there is a widespread within the order, so I'm going to have to kind of pick certain things. So I'm imagining, although I never plan all this out in advance, that we'll do some looking at the six element practice, because that's the practice that Bhante particularly recommended way back in about 1976. Some of us were on a retreat with Bhante down in Sussex in Stenning, and he tried out various insight practices on us. he didn't tell us that was what he was doing. He just introduced them, but actually, I realised afterwards he was introducing them and guiding us through, and then sort of kind of watching kind of intuitively in that way that he does, you know, how things were landing with us and what was working. And out of that, he then really, you know, sort of made the most of the six element practice. It would be good if we spend some time looking at that. If that's not your thing, for whatever reason, maybe might be a little bit more your thing by the end of the week, you'll see. It's still good. It's still really important that we understand as deeply as possible how these things work. Because even if it's not your way of setting about things, it's a traditional practice. So, and goes back to, well, the Buddha talks in terms of the elements and exploring the elements. So we can understand more about insight from looking at any insight practice. And also we can understand more about one another as order members. We can think, oh, well, you know, I'm an order member and so-and-so is an order member because they were ordained by such and such. But our linking together needs to be much deeper than that. We need common practices. You know, we all need to be able to come together and practice the mindfulness of breathing or metta bhavana or chant the Tiratnavandana or the refuges and precepts and so on. But beyond having common practices, the more we can understand how one another practice, the more strongly we shall feel an affinity, a connection with one another as order members. So part of this practice is just strengthening our links with the order, strengthening our links with one another. You know, some of what I talk about might not be how you set about doing it, but it will help you to understand how other order members set about it. And actually, it will help us to understand other human beings better because, yeah, we all have our different psychophysical configuration, our particular mudra with which we approach life. So the more we can understand that, the better, because it will bring us together. And yeah, the more we understand these different approaches to the Dharma, the better. And one of the Bodhisattva four great vows is to master all dharmas. So even if the practices that we're doing over this week, some of them don't really connect with how we need to practice now, maybe one day somebody comes along and asks us about that kind of practice, and it would be really good if we could help them out. Okay. Yes, I'm imagining we'll also do some kind of, as it were, more direct experience approaches, but we'll see how it all pans out. So spiritual death is the term that Bhante sometimes uses for insight. And all these Dharma terms, they tend to cover a very wide range of experience. So there are degrees of insight, degrees of seeing into things. There's, as it were, insight with a small I, up to insight with a capital I, as Bhante sometimes used to say, by which he meant what he called direct intuitive insight. So not something which goes beyond a conceptual understanding. It's a direct knowing of how things are. And then there are all kinds of areas in which that insight can be operative. From looking at Bless you. From looking at the five skandhas or the three marks, looking into no self, looking into the emptiness of everything that we take as other, looking into the self-other dichotomy, looking into the whole way in which concepts don't do justice to reality, looking into the nature of space and time and all our basic assumptions about how life is. And all of that we can deepen and deepen and deepen. So it's not usually, even though when we have an insight which is a direct intuitive insight, that does have a transformative effect. Still, usually, there's further to go and further to go, even in that area that we've seen into. So, I'm not going to try and sort of neatly give you definitions, other than we need to be clear about the definition between what is a conceptual understanding and what is a direct knowing. Those two can get very close, they can shade very closely to one another, but we need to be able to distinguish those. And we need to distinguish, if we're talking about spiritual death, say, we need to distinguish between experiences which are psychological and emotional, say, and which are direct understandings which are true under all circumstances. It's like, say, sometimes you can talk about, I've heard people talk about spiritual death in terms of they had, say, a really embarrassing experience. Yeah. So let's say that I'm sort of talking to you and I'm tired and I completely sort of dry up and I can't think of the next thing to say and I kind of sit here and you'll start to shuffle and it all gets really difficult. So at that point, I can feel like, well, in English, one of the things you say at that point is, oh, I could have died. I could have died. But the fact that you say that you could have died means that actually you probably didn't. There's a sort of ego deflation. And that actually does give you an opportunity to kind of look into the nature of how you create a sense of self and what that is. Your usual sense of self just got sort of, my usual sense of self just got punctured and sort of diminished. But unless I really look into the nature of that experience, then I pick myself up and this afternoon I managed to give a really good talk and so suddenly I'm back thinking, oh yes, I do good here. You see what I mean? There's a it's a bit like dhyana. Yeah, just as you can kind of have very elevated experiences and come out of it, but you haven't changed the terms of reference with which you're seeing yourself and your life. Similarly, you can have experiences where, you're challenged. One of the good things about the worldly winds, about the negative sides of the worldly winds, loss, pain, blame, and infamy, are all that they do actually offer you quite good opportunities to look into the nature of the self, because your usual sense of self is really challenged. Yeah, so I'm sort of distinguishing between those sorts of psychological and emotional things, which may, again, just pass, and things where you actually see more deeply into how things are, and those things stay with you, those things you know. Okay, maybe that's enough talking to start with. So we've got 15 minutes or so before we break and have lunch. So I'd like us just to do a few minutes practice, in a sense, just to kind of set a context and kind of come together. And the way in which these sessions will work is that usually I'll talk for a while and then there'll be a guided meditation. Might be some questions and things, but so while I'm talking, if you're not used to sitting lots, you might just want to make sure you sit really easy and save your knees for the meditations. So we'll start by doing nothing for a minute or two. Most of us have been doing lots before the retreat started. So we're not asking ourselves to do anything at all, other than just be aware of what's happening. Now let's make sure we're well connected with the ground. A lot of us have been traveling. See if we can find the actual experiences that tell us that we're supported by the earth as we sit here. about bringing awareness up into the body, aware of how we're sitting, aware of our posture. And for a minute or two, just bringing awareness into the body, to the feelings, the sensations. Kindness, with sympathy for ourselves. Now being particularly aware of the breathing. How is it to be breathing now? So we've touched base with the earth, with the body, the feelings. On a retreat like this, we're not practicing in isolation. So let's carry on being aware of the breathing, but with a sense of everyone else, over 90 of us, all breathing together, all doing our best for those breaths to be aware breaths. each of us breathing in our own particular way. We're part of one meditation that we all participate in. Finally, we're practicing together, supporting one another as best we can, but within a context. Last night we set up a mandala with the three circles. We're all seated within it. And at the heart of the mandala, represented by all the figures on the shrine, were all the qualities of awakening. All that beauty, all that richness, all that freedom, all that understanding, all that love. So to end the meditation, Naravira and Achrasraddha will just make an offering to the shrine, an offering to the three jewels on behalf of all of us. And as that's happening, we can all wish one another well. And with that offering, we all have hopes and expectations about the retreat. Which also means we have hopes and fears about the retreat. So maybe you could let those go and just make the wish that whatever's for the best for ourselves, for everyone here, whatever's for the best for the Dharma, for the world, may that happen. Let's have the offerings.